This is Kristen Hammond, and I'm doing an oral history research project for Dr. Jackson's Alabama history class. And I'm interviewing my father, Gene Cornett, and his participation in the Cuban Missile Crisis in October of 1962. What made you decide to enter the Air Force?
Jobs at that time were kind of scarce. I was newly married. There was a lot of publicity about the GI Bill and an opportunity to get college education, maybe from participation in the armed forces. So even though I was married at the time, I joined the Air Force.
So it was, you had aspirations to go to school, so it was the GI Bill that was
I'd hope that the job that I would get in the Air Force would be something I could do later as a civilian. And then I had hoped that maybe with GI Bill I could go to school, get a degree.
How many years did you have to serve?
4 years.
4 years.
The Army had a 2-year plan, and all the other branches of the armed services was 4 years. And you got a little more school GI Bill credit for 4 years than you did too. So.
Okay. When did you enter the Air Force?
In August of 1961.
That was...
I joined the Air Force in Tuscaloosa, and within about 3 or 4 weeks, went to Montgomery for processing and physicals and whatever, and then went to basic training in San Antonio, Texas.
For boot camp, that one?
Yeah, basic training in the Air Force. It's called basic training.
Oh. And where were you first stationed?
Did the basic training routine actually it was Lackland Air Force Base in Texas for about 3 months or so, and then was stationed in Eglin Air Force Base at Fort Walton Beach, Florida.
During, the beginning of the 60s, I guess right as Kennedy came into office, what was the mood of the country like toward Russia, toward, you know, the Cold War? What was the feelings of the country then?
Well, at that point in time, Russia was, you know, our enemy, so to speak, and the civilian people or the people in the country were the prospects of a nuclear bomb, atomic bomb, was, you know, was a topic of discussion, and people were actually building fallout shelters and bomb shelters, and public shelters were clearly marked, and you know, where they might be located in public buildings. In fact, in Anniston, that the building where Channel 40 is located now, the basement of that building was a fallout shelter. And the sign may still be up there. It was kind of a nuclear, atomic fallout shelter.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, Russia was perceived as an enemy, and the threat of, you know, atomic nuclear bombs was, you know, it was pretty prevalent at the time.
So
it was on everybody's mind. Yeah.
People really believed that it would eventually happen.
It's perceived as a possibility, sure.
Okay. Right after you entered the service in 1961, so that was a year right before the Cuban Missile Crisis. After you entered the Air Force, what was their attitude toward Russia and the Cold War? Was there a lot of talk of it?
Well, the big thing with the Air Force was the Strategic Air Command was put together about the time that the Cold War, the perceived threat from Russia, and that was long-range bombing capability, and the tactical command from the Air Force was kind of a preventive thing to intercept missiles. So, but you got to understand that both countries had missiles with nuclear warheads ready and aimed at each other at all times. And the Air Force had airplanes in the air that, with nuclear weapons armed and ready in the air at all times. So it was kind of a, it was a lot of tension. It was a lot of, you know, that was our mission, you know, to be ready and to retaliate.
And what were you trained as far as what to do in the event of a nuclear attack? Was that part of your training?
Well,
or?
You know, everybody had their job to do, and it wasn't, you know, your personal survival was, you know, some kind of suit that you could put on that would protect you from the fallout and so forth, but you know, personal survival wasn't the important thing. The important thing was the mission and keeping the aircraft secure if they were on the ground, or flying if they were supposed to be in the air and, you know, able to carry out their mission. But it was serious business.
What was the mission of Eglin Air Force Base?
Eglin is a really unusual military base. It's real close to Alabama. It's just across the state line at, on the beach at Fort Walton. It's the largest in land mass, largest Air Force base in the United States. The mission, they had really three missions there. They was a strategic air command mission where the B-52 long-range bombers were stationed there, and the nuclear warheads were in place on those bombers when they were in there. And, they would have an alert quite often to test the readiness and preparedness of getting the airplanes in the air. You know, they'd sound the horn, and everybody had a job to do, and these big, massive, huge airplanes would scrambling, taking off, you know, one a minute or something. It was really a sight. It was really an experience to be included in that.
So that was the drills were a regular part of the training, like
sure,
in the case of a nuclear attack. They would all take off and with their nuclear warheads.
It was called, had to be on alert status all the time. In the Strategic Air Command, and they would have, the term was red alert, and a red alert was to get all the aircraft in there. So it was, and you know, an aircraft is, the wingspan on a B-52 is, seems like I remember, like 300 feet, so the wingspan is, you know, as long as a football field. So it's a huge aircraft.
Well,
another part of the mission at Eglin was training for different types of weapons. And another mission there was tactical, which they would, the fighter bombers and so forth.
What was your duties in the Air Force? What was your job?
I was a
job.
Armed Forces Police, security detail, and I spent a lot of time guarding those B-52 aircraft that were, when they were on the ground, and provided security for those for the aircraft.
So you sometimes you'd be out there and they would take off on a drill, or
yeah, if you were, if you happened to be there when the alert started, well, you had your job to do is keep everybody off the flight line so the pilots could get to the aircraft and the aircraft could taxi to the end of the runway and get in the air. A lot of noise.
When did you first learn, or how did you hear that, you know, what was going on in Cuba, that there was something definitely going on in Cuba?
Another kind of alert status would, and I can't recall the term, but a red alert when you've got everything in the air. A different kind of alert status would be when everybody was just practically on duty all the time, and we went into that kind of advanced alert status. And I really can't recall the date exactly, but the Air Force had these surveillance spy planes, U-2s,
right.
And they had picked up, made pictures of missiles, Russian missiles that were being assembled in Cuba, and of course Cuba's only 90 miles away from the United States or something like that. And this was perceived as a real threat to the United States security. So all the military was on an alert when those pictures were discovered, those missiles were discovered in Cuba. So, you know, immediately went to real intense alert status, the whole military did, and we did it at Eglin. Part of the strategy for the United States was to move a lot of ground troops and airborne troops from the Army and the Marines to South Florida. So if they had some kind of confrontation, they could be in Russia, in Cuba, in just a very short time. So part of our mission with the security detail at Eglin was to accommodate the convoys of troops and equipment that was coming from different parts of the United States to South Florida. And we would go to small towns around Eglin and where the convoys would be coming through and block traffic so that they could, you know, get to South Florida as quickly as they could.
Was Eglin like the main base, or was that just one of them that they had in Florida as far as, you know, for getting ready for a possible invasion of Cuba?
Well, you know, our mission really was just to help get the as far as the military police and armed forces police was concerned, our mission at Eglin was just to help the ground troops get through the traffic and through the small towns and get to South Florida as quick as they could. The Strategic Air Command mission at Eglin, of course, if they, you know, heightened alert status, they might have had, instead of two aircraft in the air all the time, they might have had five in the air at all times or something, you know, so they could retaliate if they had to. Our mission was really just to help the troops get to South Florida.
So Eglin might have been like a passing through almost to go farther on. Did you know why, when you went on alert status, did they brief you and tell you why, you know, what was going on?
To a certain extent, but yeah, it was really newsworthy, the newspapers and television,
right.
You know, news accounts, all of it. But the military don't spend a whole lot of time telling you why.
They just,
you know, here's your job and go do it. But, we all knew what the deal was.
Because it was in late October when Kennedy finally announced it on TV. People probably had already heard that there was going to be a naval blockade.
Mm-hmm.
Everybody had heard about the crisis. Did your unit specifically prepare in a special way for, you know, in the case of an attack, or
just more intense alert status and you know, security was, you know, strengthened and expanded to more sections of the base, more types of aircraft, more equipment. But everybody just, you know, had to do their job in a, you know, a more intense way. I mean, it was just really, really, use the word intense a lot, but 12 hours, 12 hours on, 12 hours off, so half the people, half the force was on duty at all times. Just heightened security at missile sites and aircraft that might be called into duty.